Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to our April board meeting. Again, a meeting, a virtual meeting, which worked well the last time, and we hope it will work well this time as well. We are going to first talk about the impact of the COVID crisis to our timelines. Who do I give the floor to?
This is Neelie Hans.
Neelie?
I'll go
Yeah,
ahead and take
Neelie,
it.
yes.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Well, good morning, everybody, and hope you all are keeping well. I think it goes without saying that the coronavirus pandemic has given rise to many challenges for our stakeholders. So the purpose of this paper is to explore ways to assist our stakeholders by adjusting the board's timelines. And even though we're bringing this paper to you today, given all of the uncertainty in the environment, we will continue to monitor developments and consider implications on the timeline going forward. And more generally, we are also monitoring financial reporting issues that are arising from COVID-19. And you can see one aspect of that, with the second agenda item today on leases. So, Agenda Paper 32 is divided into three sections. The first section is on stakeholder feedback, which is discussed in paragraphs 8 to 11. And the most significant point to flag here is that there is a consistent message that the board proceed with its original timetables for IBOR Phase 2 and for the amendments to IFRS 17. And as you are all aware, the board has done so with the issuance of the exposure draft on IBOR Phase 2 last week. So the remainder of my comments and my tee-up will not apply to those two projects. And then the other big takeaway from stakeholder feedback is that for some of the other projects, there was a consistent message for additional time for stakeholders to address and think about the issues in our documents. So starting with the second section of the paper where we will seek board decisions, this piece is on final amendments. And there's a smaller piece of the section related to forthcoming narrow scope amendments as discussed in paragraphs 14 and 15. And the main takeaway here is that we are seeking to bundle the issuance of our smaller amendments because we believe it'll be easier for our stakeholders to process those amendments in one go, as opposed to sort of drip feeding them out to our stakeholders. The more substantive point in this section is on delaying the effective date of the amendments to IAS-1 on the classification of liabilities as current or non-current, which is discussed in paragraphs 12 and 13. Currently, the amendments are effective as of the 1st of January 2022, and staff is recommending that we delay it by 1 year to 2023. And the reason for this is one, because when we were doing our consultation, we received feedback that it's important for stakeholders to have sufficient time between the issuance of the document and the effective date of the amendments in order to renegotiate their covenants. In addition, because renegotiation involves third parties, which entities obviously cannot control, we believe that that's going to add further challenges to the burdens that are already coming about from COVID-19. And then finally, the staff are of the view that because the amendments are important, they are narrow in scope, so that this is a change that would be realistic to do in a very short period of time. So I'll pause there for any questions or comments and take the vote on the first question on page 5, excuse me, before moving on to the last section of the paper.
Any comments? Yes, Rika. Rika, you're on mute. Cannot hear you.
Sorry. Yes.
Okay, yeah.
I'm sorry, I was on the mute. Yes. And this is not a comment and a question to the staff, especially about the onerous contract amendment to the IAS 37. I think within all the amendments in the paragraph 15, I think this one is a little bit broader amendment than others, especially when the entity have a contract with the customers outside the scope of the original IS 11. So in that case, the entity might have a more substantial impact in the practice. So my question is, if the staff did any additional assessment for comparing this amendment, could you please explain to me?
Yeah, happy to. Sue, I saw your hand go up. Did you want to say something first, or I'm happy to respond to Rika?
I can wait.
Okay. Okay. So to answer your question, Rika, yes, we did think about all of the forthcoming amendments and the other amendments that have been issued to see whether there's a reason to delay or recommend a delay in the effective dates. And our thinking was that we wanted to strike that balance between helping our stakeholders, but also not unduly delaying improvements to financial reporting. The other thing that we noted is that classification of liabilities is different from some of the other amendments that you note, such as IAS 37, in that with classification of liabilities, our stakeholders need to involve a third party, as I mentioned. They have to go out to their banks to try to renegotiate these loan covenants. So there are things that are not within their control. The other thing to bear in mind is that with classification of liabilities, the amendments are retrospective, whereas that's not the case with IAS 37. So we think there's an additional level of effort that would be needed for classification of liabilities. Joan, is there anything further you'd want to add to that?
I think these are the two most important points. The only other thing that I would possibly add is the difference in the type of the amendments, and that the classification of liabilities amendments are presentation only. So by delaying their implementation, you're not delaying the recognition of any liabilities, just where they're presented on the statement of position, whereas with the onerous contracts amendments, it's actually affecting what will be recognised by way of liabilities, and at a time when there might be more onerous contracts around, it's probably there could be a downside to delaying the implementation that there wouldn't be with classification of liabilities.
Sue?
Thanks, Hans. I put up my hand to comment on classification of liabilities, but I'll just comment on 37 quickly as well. I think the other thing for me that's important to remember for 37 is that that was a question that came into the Interpretations Committee, and it was from memory to do with some of the consequences of IFRS 15 being introduced. So there were some timing considerations along with the timing of 15, which don't go away as a result of COVID-19. So I think it's still important to get the effective date of that 37 amendment out and up and running because of that interaction with 15. So I support where the staff is with that. In terms of the classification of liabilities as current and non-current, I am supportive of deferring the effective date by a year as proposed by the staff. Personally, I'm not so sure that it's such a big deal for covenants, because my recollection is that we didn't expect this to be a particularly fundamental change. It's more of a clarification of what we have in IS 1, so there will be some changes. But it's a project we ourselves took a long time to get finished, so I think it's fair, really, in terms of the incremental benefits from a decision usefulness, including because it's presentation, I think are not so dramatic for the benefit from a burden perspective for stakeholders when they're dealing with everything else. So for me, I think the cost-benefit equation means that I would support the deferral, although I'm not so sure that there's going to be massive covenant renegotiations as a result of this change, but I still support the deferral. And Hans, well, I've got the floor, just Mary's on the phone and she wants to come in. Maybe we could let her in.
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Sue said some of what I was going to comment on. I want to say to Neely's tee up that I think it's right to consider and focus the impact of delays on our earlier stage projects. And I also agree with not slowing down IFRS 17 or the IBOR project. Specifically on this classification proposal, I support the staff proposal. I also paused and thought about whether we need to have any disclosure, and then tied to this amendment, given that we're deferring it. And then I realized that I think it's the IS 8 requirement to discuss the effect of a published but not adopted amendment would, let's say, in the case of an entity that may want to try to renegotiate its debt covenants, would still require them to disclose the fact that they'd be in breach if they couldn't renegotiate once they adopt the amendment. So I think we've got it. So I think we've got it covered with existing disclosure requirements. But I just wanted to flag that people need to think through that. Through that point. That's it.
Any other comments? No? So do we agree with the staff's recommendation?
Yes, for me, Hans.
Okay, thank you, Mary. I think that's all.
I see, no? 14. Yep. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 14.
Okay. Good.
Yep. Okay, thank you. So moving on to the last section in agenda paper 32, this paper discusses consultation documents. And again, there's a smaller point in here about forthcoming consultation documents and when we would be issuing them, which is discussed in paragraphs 19 to 21. The main takeaway here is staging the documents to give our stakeholders more time to respond and not have so many overlapping documents that would affect large groups of stakeholders at the same time. The more substantive point in this section is about providing what the staff proposes as a 3-month extension to the comment period deadlines for the 3 consultation documents that are currently outstanding. So this would be, the exposure draft on general presentation and disclosures, the request for information on comprehensive review of IFRS for SME standard, and the discussion paper on business combinations, disclosure, goodwill, and impairment. Our view here is that it's important to give stakeholders sufficient time to provide high-quality feedback that is so critical for developing high-quality standards, but we also want to balance that with the fact that we do have momentum in the consultations already underway, and that despite COVID-19, we do have outreach activities that have still been conducted. So with that, I will pause for discussion and question number 2 on page 7.
Yes, Nick.
Thank you. So I support the staff recommendation in question 2 that we extend the consultation period on those 3 projects. What's causing me to pause a little more for thought is around the forthcoming stakeholder consultations. And here for 2 reasons. I guess, first of all, one of my lessons, takeaways from my years in portfolio management is certainly in managing money, one has to be very careful about decisions taken in the midst of a crisis. Perhaps the world of standard setting is less emotive, or people get less emotional than they do in the world of portfolio management, but I can think of lots of occasions where I would have rather stood back a little. And I know I kind of, half of me is left pausing, think whether we do need to make those decisions today. Equally, I appreciate providing our stakeholders with a fuller picture of our direction of travel here has some merit. But that's a relatively minor issue. The other one goes back to a specific around the agenda consultation. And here, the research that we've been undertaking leading up to that consultation and our broader engagement with users has continued to flag a longstanding request from users for better information about cash flows, and transactions that are economically equivalent to cash flow but bypass this cash flow statement. And this is summed up in a request for a net debt reconciliation. We've heard concerns expressed at this board table about the level of indebtedness. And in that respect, users are looking for better information about entities' ability to service that debt. And that can be done through a net debt reconciliation. And so when I look at paragraph 19D and thinking about the impact of COVID-19. Clearly, when an economy is under stress, these issues become even more urgent, even more exacerbated. So one of the consequences, clearly, of then pushing back the agenda consultation is that this issue gets pushed even further back in the pipeline. And I would just remind board members that, I mean, as far as I'm aware, this issue has been, I mean, it's been discussed and requested by users for a long time. Kraft discussed it in 2005. I know we've made some moves to try and address this through the amendment to IS7. Our work so far has suggested that's been partially successful, but not fully successful. And I really just want to flag that I think it becomes an even more pertinent issue today, as I say, when economies are under stress than previously.
Any other comments? Changwu?
Thank you, Hans. I agree with all the recommendations, the steps suggested here. But one thing I am some concern is the IFRS for SMEs. We are going to delay 3 months for the request for information for that comprehensive review of IFRS for SMEs. I think many of our stakeholders who are more related to this IFRS for SMEs are expected to have more some big consequences, contagions later on. So how about giving more room to those countries who are maybe having a bit more difficulty? So I would like to suggest maybe 6 months more on this the second project for IFRS for SMEs.
Nelly, would you want to respond to that, or?
It makes sense what you're suggesting, the possibility of providing more time. But what we were trying to do here is balance the fact that we already do have outreach that's underway, and we do have stakeholders that are engaging with us through virtual video conference and so forth. So it is something that we do need to keep monitoring, but at least as it stands right now, we thought a 3-month extension was a logical starting point.
Françoise, I saw.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with the staff recommendations and the arguments for them. I would like, however, that we give ourselves more time before what is presented in Table 2 in terms of postponement of projects eventually be considered a bit further. And I'm thinking more particularly of the forthcoming exposure draft on the targeted standard level review of disclosures. I'm not opposing the common period would end as it is shown postponed, but I would rather be in favor of publishing the document sooner than shown and providing stakeholders with a longer consultation period. I think it's two main reasons. Two or three main reasons, in fact. The first one is that this response, that's in fact the last wave of response, but the standard setting response to the priority that was flagged in the 205 agenda consultation. The second is that there has been quite a good momentum by the team, and they have reached out to users who have invested quite a lot of time in providing us input. And, you know, every time we stop a project, postpone it by such a long period of time, there is a great loss of momentum. And I'm afraid of that. And more importantly, I think it's really a project where people we want to test, we want to, it's not so much understanding the implications, but in what they can do, how they can implement, whether it would work. And having a longer consultation period would be very beneficial, in fact. So I would want us to have the opportunity to discuss that before this is carved in stone.
Okay, and when you say longer consultation period, did you have something specific in mind?
Well, I thought that, you know, we shouldn't push the publication date by so long. So okay. Eventually okay. Publish it, you know, 3 months in advance of what is shown here.
Okay.
Daryl?
So two things that I wanted to come in on. I think to Chang Wu's point on the additional period for SMEs, I think Nili, I agree very much with the way you responded to that. I think the two issues here that we need to balance is firstly give additional time, but at the same time, and I think Francois, you picked up on this too, not interfere with the fact that people are already starting to do some work in the background, and we want to keep that momentum going. And certainly a lot of the feedback that I've been getting on the SME review is that people are doing some work on the background. It has been slowed down a little bit, but they are doing the work. But I think the second thing, Nili, that you said that is really important, and I think this probably goes for all of our projects, is that we need to continue to sort of monitor this. And the fact that we've given 3 months now, I don't think should preclude us if we feel later down the line that there's a need to do more. That we shouldn't actually do more at that later stage. So just to summarize, I'm very comfortable with what the staff recommendation is at the moment, but I do think it's important that we continue to monitor the situation.
Rika.
Thank you, Hans. Yeah, I think I agree with what Daryl said right now. I actually do not suggest any further delay or any changes in the timeline as staff recommended here. But I truly think because of this uncertainty surrounding the impact of the COVID-19 in each jurisdiction, we cannot tell what the right timeline for individual projects. So I think it's really important to carefully monitor the progress of the project itself and also the status of the stakeholders' capability and resources they have within themselves. So I should recommend the staff to carefully monitor and should be reassessed when it's necessary.
Tom? Tom?
Yeah, sorry, just unmuting. I just wanted to, I think, support what Chang Wu said a little bit. I've no doubt that some of our stakeholders in the SME field are carrying on. But just taking it to October, when I look at what's going on, many, many places are just speculating on when they may come out of this. And I think it's important to think about which SMEs aren't going to respond. And the ones who are keeping going, I'm assuming, are in reasonable economic shape. The ones who are probably excluded are not in such hot economic. So it's not clear we're getting a proper balanced response in a world like this. So I think what Daryl said is reasonable, but I'd be really cautious. And I guess my big question there would be, is it realistic that the ones who are not doing so well can actually get their act together to respond by October? And down deep, I think probably not. So I'd be concerned with that. I also just had a question on the others, particularly the PFS. Is the field work going to be the whole point? Originally was that the kind of the field work and the comments would all kind of come in together. Is the field work going okay with the entities who are doing it, given their constrained circumstances?
Yeah, I think in some cases it is proceeding, but I think there are other challenges where the fieldwork participants have other distractions that are taking priority over either participating or once they've committed to participate, moving forward with their testing or their work.
Sue?
Thanks.
Just one final comment then. Sorry. If it turned out that the field work was going to require the field work to be delayed for this, then it would make sense to simply move the dates back to so that they were still coming in. There'd be no point to get all the comments and we're still waiting for, well, not no point, but it wouldn't be a huge advantage to get all the comments in if field work was still going, because I think in PFS field work will be important.
In relation to question two, I agree with the staff's recommendations in terms of extending the consultation periods on these documents. Obviously, we're in a very fluid situation, so I'd say 3 months for now, and then if we needed to, we can always reassess later. I'd agree with that. In relation to the other consultations and the proposals to defer the timing of going out with things, until we had the ASAF meeting, I was in a far more hard-hearted place, but I think we got some very clear and thoughtful input from ASAF, which really made me stop and think about how we're perceived from outside. And I think we're in a bit of an odd position at the moment where we can do a lot of our work in the normal way because this is our core business. A lot of our work is relatively easy to do remotely. And we need to remind ourselves that that's not the same for all of our stakeholders. And so we sort of maybe need to put the brakes on a bit more than what we otherwise would to accommodate our stakeholders and to make sure that they can give us the thoughtful input that we need. And so I think it's right to look at delaying consultations. I'm not sure that if we went out with documents and sort of normal timelines, even with extended comment periods, whether stakeholders would think we were really being empathetic to the situation that they're in, and they may be angry with receiving documents as though things are normal because that's not how they feel it is. And I know that getting banks to focus on something like IFRS 13 disclosures at the moment was probably a difficult thing to ask them to do with all of the other stuff they're dealing with. And also, I think the other thing just to be conscious of, and Catherine might not thank me for saying this, so Catherine, apologies in advance if you disagree, because I know you do love your targeted standards level review. But let's not forget that the same staff who have lost their Easter weekend getting things ready for the discussion on leases that we're about to have are the same staff working on the targeted standards level review. So we're having to move our resources as well to target the urgent things for our stakeholders, and that has knock-on consequences for us too. And that's it. You know, we've got a very live case in point here with Catherine working both on the 16 work and on targeted standards level review. And I'm sure she'd work 27 hours a day if she could on those things, knowing Catherine. But I'm not sure we should be asking that of them either.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? I believe we are. Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
Hans, this is Mary. I support it.
Okay, thank you, Mary.
Okay. I see 14.
Yes, all right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So then, in light of the board's decision on classification of liabilities, we can move on to agenda paper 32A. In order to defer the effective date of those amendments to 2023, the board would need to publish an exposure draft. And one second here. And so paper 32A sets out the due process steps that the board has taken to publish the exposure draft. And then it asks the board three questions on page three about the comment period, whether any board member has intent to dissent, and whether the board is satisfied that it has complied with due process requirements and that it grants permission to begin the balloting process. With respect to the first of those three questions on the comment period, I just wanted to flag that the staff's reasons for a shortened comment period of 30 days is laid out in paragraph 5, and that this would allow, if everything goes as planned, for the board to make its final decisions at the June meeting, which we think would provide clarity to stakeholders on a timely basis. And as you know, that any comment period of less than 120 days requires approval from our due process oversight committee, and we were granted that approval at a meeting yesterday. So I'll turn the table over to board members for any questions or comments.
No questions or comments. So I suppose then we can vote to to see whether we support the staff's recommendations.
So 30-day comment period, Mary?
Yes, and to get ahead, I'm not going to dissent and I give permission to ballot and I'll go back on mute.
Okay. We have 14 for
yeah,
that. Thank
I think this is for all three. Yeah. Well, yeah. Except for, of course.
Yeah, hopefully not 14 dissents, but yeah.
No.
Yeah, sorry, 14-0, 14. Yes. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, all right, thank you.